Tammy Govea-Vigent. I'm from the Northeast Center for Healthy Communities in Massachusetts. And it's a great pleasure for me to be here today because it was a year ago today that this ballot initiative that I'm going to be talking about today was defeated. So it's pretty interesting. Today's election day. So it's a great pleasure to be here exactly a year later. Just by way of giving you a context of sort of the world that I work in, I work at one of the regional centers in Massachusetts. There are six regional centers, and we're funded primarily by the Department of Public Health through the Bureau of Substance Abuse Services to work with community-based coalitions around substance abuse prevention, strategic planning, action planning, program implementation, and evaluation. We promote partnerships among our leaders regionally, locally, and we work very closely with youth and young adults and help mobilize them to be part of the coalitions that we work with. And one of the main things that we're really getting into with our coalitions is working on environmental strategies, particularly around policy efforts. Right now in the state, there is not a statewide, very concerted policy effort. And so that's one thing that's important to know about the state of Massachusetts. The other thing that's important to know about the state of Massachusetts is that all the boards of health are locally controlled. We don't have a county health system, so that makes us very different than a lot of the states in the nation. So that's another reason why the role that we play at the regional centers is pretty important, because we serve as an intermediate role between the states and the local efforts. So some of the evidence-based environmental strategies that we work on with our local coalitions, or that our coalitions are intricately involved in, are responsible beverage service, alcohol compliance checks — this is a big one — happy hour restrictions — Massachusetts already has that, happy hour restrictions — sobriety and traffic safety checkpoints, graduated driver's license, social host laws — we have quite a bit of efforts through local DA's offices to do social host liability laws and awareness raising. Keg registration — we don't have that as of yet, I don't think. Restricting alcohol sales at public events — that's hit or miss depending on the community. Reducing alcohol outlet density, which this is really related to the topic that I'm going to be talking about today, which is trying to, by the grocery stores, to allow for wine to be sold at food stores. And then increasing taxes on sale of alcohol. I'm happy to say that we actually have a bill that's gaining some traction to increase excise taxes on alcohol. And if you went to a presentation earlier today with Michael Botticelli, who's from the Department of Public Health, they were talking about the fact that Massachusetts hasn't revisited its taxes on alcohol in about 30 years. So the question that was put to the voters last year was this act to increase consumer convenience and choice by permitting food stores to sell wine. And what this would have done is allowed municipalities to create a new class of licenses that would allow grocery stores, gas stations, convenience stores to sell wine. And it was wine only, but many people in the prevention field and the public safety field were nervous that this would lead to a slippery slope with beer and liquor. Massachusetts is only one of three states throughout the nation that does not currently allow widespread sale of wine and beer at grocery stores. However, each license holder in the state of Massachusetts is allowed to have three alcohol licenses. So a Stop and Shop, which is a grocery store, can have three licenses throughout the state, but they can have no more than that. 7-Eleven, same thing. Mobile Quick Mart, same thing. And the food that they were... that was on the ballot that was up for consideration would include things like beef jerky, cheese sticks, you know, pizzas on the go, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of concern around the fact that this would increase alcohol density. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. The key players on the pro side, of course, were the grocery stores, and this is through the Massachusetts Food Association. They spent a record $7 million on their campaigns, and I'm going to show some of the ads that were played during this this debate, if you will. And then on the other side were the wine merchants and concerned citizens for safety. This included package stores, to a certain extent included public health, concerned residents, and public safety. The Massachusetts Police Chiefs Association was pretty heavily involved in this, and there were a number of police chiefs throughout the state that worked with their local boards of health and local citizens to sort of create some advocacy around this ballot. So here are the pros and cons. I don't want to spend too much time on these, just so that we can get to discussion later on. But on the pro side, wine is not a drink of choice for teens. There were some who were, we had a lot of discussion about, well, would it normalize buying alcohol in grocery stores, particularly if the industry and if the grocery stores were able to move from wine only into, you know, distilled spirits and beer. Grocery stores are good at enforcing underage drinking laws. On the flip side, they're not going to be shut down if they sell to minors. Liquor stores hold an unfair monopoly. And on the other side, part of what the liquor stores were saying is that they would be driven out of industry. A lot of mom-and-pop shops would close, so there's a lot of concern around that. More outlets equals greater availability, which equals lower cost for consumers, but this goes back to it would basically increase alcohol outlet density. And so on the prevention side, doing environmental strategies, it's really important to decrease the number of alcohol outlets that you have. So this would be the opposite of that. And grocery stores will monopolize over time and eventually drive up prices, kind of similar to what we see to the big box stores. Not every town uses every liquor license. We do have some towns in the state of Massachusetts that are dry towns, and so left up to the municipalities to choose whether or not to grant additional licenses. However, some communities, like the one that I live in, could have seen up to 100 new liquor licenses available in their community. One thing I didn't talk about is very quickly the history of this initiative. Some people were really thinking about, well, you know, why didn't the supermarkets bring this to the legislature? But they actually did, and it was defeated, I think, in 2005. So there's been some history with this, and so the grocery stores decided to put it to the people. So I'm going to show you three quick ads. Hopefully this will work.
In Massachusetts, a 72-year-old law still prohibits most grocery stores from selling wine and gives liquor stores a virtual monopoly. Today, most states allow grocery stores to sell wine. In fact, only two other states still have a monopoly quota system like Massachusetts. Ballot question one will finally update our law, so Massachusetts consumers can purchase wine at their local grocery stores. Vote yes on one for better competition and consumer choice.
Pretty funny. I was at a session earlier, and we were actually talking about, sometimes the way this conversation went is that, well, Massachusetts is behind the times. They haven't caught up to what everybody else is doing. And sometimes in this country, we talk about, well, why is the drinking age 18? Why is it 21? We should put it back to 18, like European countries. And at a session earlier today, I learned that a lot of European countries now are starting to look to, or a number of them are starting to look to the states in terms of how we regulate and actually have a lower drinking age. So it's just kind of, you know, funny to think about, where things are at and how things could change. So, and then I have two on the other side. There's actually one other ad that I wasn't able to get, but it was put out on the pro side by Kim Hinden. She was one of the spokespeople, and I think she was the head of consumer affairs at one point, so it's pretty interesting to see who comes out on either side of an issue. And I know personally a lot of folks really responded to the officer's advertisement, but then on the other side there were a lot of people who said, well, oh, you just do what the police tell you. So it's kind of interesting, the conversation and how heated the debate got. So in terms of the results, as a public health professional, as prevention professional, it was defeated by 265,000 votes. 46 communities voted for the ballot. Most of them were in the northeast part of the state, which is where I live and where I do my work. The southeast part of the state, which if you're familiar with Massachusetts at all, includes the Cape and south of Boston, and they had only two communities that voted to pass the ballot initiative. Most of the communities were suburbs or smaller towns, but there were some larger towns such as or cities, including Salem, Cambridge, Brookline, and Somerville that passed it. Somerville is where the police chief that we heard from is actually from, so too bad. This is a map of state of Massachusetts. Those in yellow are the ones that passed the initiative. So as I said, the ones up in the northeast part of the state, that's where we saw a lot more communities coming out in support of the ballot. This is just so that you can really get a close-up view of Greater Boston. And here's a list of the towns. So in terms of the methods that I use just to kind of look at this issue, I don't know of anybody else who's looked at this topic at all. If there is anybody out there who has, I'd love to talk to you more about it. But I looked at census data. I looked at what the vote results were. I did some mapping. And I also spoke with my colleagues in the other regional centers to figure out what efforts did they were they part of with their community coalitions to come out against the ballot. And there was also a Boston Globe blog that went on for a number of weeks, almost into the month of December, going a lot of back-and-forth discussion about why people voted on either side of the issue. I can say for the Boston Globe blog, just for curiosity's sake, most of them responded to the advertisements either positively or negatively. A lot of them actually talked about the culture of Massachusetts being puritanical and liberal at the same time, so it's kind of an interesting history. Many of them also, on the pro side, responded to capitalism and fair competition. And there were a number of people who responded to public safety. There were not many that mentioned the public health implications of youth being able to access alcohol if they could get it from their friends or, you know, who work at the grocery stores or work at the convenience stores and that kind of thing. So the next thing I did is, I spoke with my colleagues in the regional center system, and my question to them was, where were coalitions that existed at the time that the ballot was defeated, and what efforts did the coalitions engage in? That was the primary interest that I had. So this is a map of where communities have community coalitions, whether it's drug-free communities grantees, or they get funding through the state, or maybe they're not a funded community. Some of these are centered around a single town that they all kind of collaborate together. So we see that particularly in the western part of the state, and then also in the greater Boston area, there's a number of community coalitions. There are many more that, you know, get funded every year as more money comes available through the Drug-Free Communities Grant and that kind of thing. And then this is the greater Boston area. My findings are that, and just looking at this, 72 of the communities in the state of Massachusetts, there are 351 cities and towns, have an anti-drug or substance abuse prevention coalition at the time that the ballot was defeated. Among the communities with the coalition, 8 voted no, or 19%, and 67 voted yes. And coalition involvement in advocating against the ballot was mixed. And some of this might have to do with the fact of where they get their funding. As I said, Somerville, Cambridge, and Brookline, they voted for the ballot initiative, and they have a community coalition that exists. What's interesting is that when you look at the Boston votes, it was defeated, but not by very many votes. It was only defeated by 200 votes. There were, in Boston, there are a number of neighborhoods, and 9 neighborhoods came together and did a lot of advocacy, a lot of visibility, went to the State House to talk about this issue. And Somerville, Cambridge, and Brookline border on Boston, so it's interesting to look at that. What I also found is that the coalitions that came out really strongly in advocating against the ballot initiative saw a greater disparity in the number of people voting against the initiative than those voting for it. So, for instance, just to pull one out so I can keep moving on, in Worcester, they had a lot of efforts around the ballot initiative, and they had a difference of 6,839 votes voting against the ballot initiative. I'm probably at time, right? Okay. So the other things I looked at, if you want to go and look at the presentation, you know, after the conference is all done, the other things I looked at were sociodemographic characteristics. So this is the population size. As you can see, in Greater Boston, there are many more higher population. And just looking at where do the communities vote for or against it. So what I found is that most communities voting for the ballot have population less than 40,000. So they're mid-sized communities. Again, Salem, Brookline, Somerville, Cambridge, and Methuen have slightly larger populations. They voted for it. So it seems like population size doesn't really have a huge effect on whether or not a community would vote for or against it. This one is on age, and you can see in the western part of the state and in the Cape, tends to be the median age is older, 47 to 56. And also in the Greater Boston area, it seems like the age is actually at 39 to 41, so a median age of 39 to 41 years. And so what I found is that the median age of communities voting either way differ by only 1 year, so there wasn't too much of effect. However, when you look at Somerville, Cambridge, and Brookline, they tended to be younger communities, so age 31, 30 years old. Again, you know, with Boston having a lot of colleges and universities, that might be the effect there. The other thing I looked at was income level. In the eastern part of the state and in Greater Boston, income levels tend to be higher. For those, it seemed like median incomes for communities voting for the ballot ranged from 36 to 153,000, and then those communities voting for it had not necessarily a wider range, but they started at the lower end, so 22,000 for median income. And then I also looked at high school graduation and college graduation rates. I want to get to my next steps of my recommendations. So I'm not a statistician. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm just a curious prevention professional that just wanted to look at this issue in terms of how it impacts the community coalitions in the state of Massachusetts, but also more broadly, where are community coalitions becoming involved in policy, and are they making a difference? Are they having an impact? And so one thing that, you know, if there are folks out there who are interested in this, doing some follow-up analysis and looking even more closely at the sociodemographic characteristics of the different communities that voted one way or the other. Also looking at even more closely, more rigorously, the role of the coalitions in policy making. This is particularly interesting for us in Massachusetts, as I said, because we don't have a statewide coalition. Some other states have these really great statewide efforts that are going on, and I'm pretty envious of that, actually. So, prepare for the next move. One of the things that came up pretty strongly in the blogs is that people on both sides of the issue are very confident that there's going to be some other effort that's going to happen around this issue. So for public health to be pretty prepared, we were pretty much behind the eight ball. It was public safety out front, and then we were able to sort of join forces, but it was pretty late in the game. It was late July, early August that we really started to have some major talks about this initiative. On a larger scale, because obviously this isn't the only policy issue that's coming up, but mobilize statewide policy initiatives and really figure out the role of public safety and the role of public health together, along with the role of the anti-drug coalitions, particularly youth in that. And then implement social marketing campaigns at different target different populations about the role of public health and environmental strategies to reduce underage drinking. Just want to say a special thank you to my colleagues and to interns in my office, Penelope Bruce, Diane Black, Megan McMahon, and staff at the regional centers for all of their help and support in this presentation. Thank you. And here's my contact.